Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. You know, in his latest weekly blog found in Sabbath Moment, Terry Hershey explores the words of theologian philosopher Howard Thurman by delving into Thurman's question concerning what makes you come alive. Thurman's actual words are these: don't ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive and go do that, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. I like this topic so much that I invited Terry on the show to discuss it, since he's been writing about it for about a week. So the question is, for all of us, what makes you come alive? Several things make us feel alive, but rarely do we address this question as we are today. Today, Terry and I will ponder together what the question means for us personally. Now, if you're a frequent listener to the show, then you are already familiar with Terry Hershey, who is a regular guest. If you don't know him, Terry is a prolific writer, conference keynote speaker, renowned landscape architect, and a spiritual advisor. With that, let's welcome Hirsch on the show. Yo, Hirsch, what's up, man?
Hey, Charles. Glad to be here.
Thank you. You know, I really have this affinity for Howard Thurman's directive to ask yourself what makes you come alive, because the world is in need of alive people. So, you know, a question came to me that I thought might be a good opening to this conversation, and it was sort of unexpected even for me. And the first question begins like this: in your mind, what is the difference between being alive and not being alive? How does one know that she or he is even alive or not?
Was that a question?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
You want me to repeat it?
No. Have I ever told you the story about the first grade class?
Let's say no.
Yeah. This is my favorite part about getting to a certain age, is you just start with that sentence knowing that if people are your age, they won't have remembered anyway.
That's why I said that. Now, did you say people that get my age or our age?
Close, both, yeah. So the first grade class was asked to name the seven wonders of the world. And of course, that would not necessarily be easy for first graders, but, you know, hands shot up and the teacher's cheering them on. And, you know, Niagara Falls is one kid, the teacher says that's great. And Grand Canyon says the other kid, teacher says that's great. You know, and they're doing great. The pyramids and the kids are doing great, first graders. And of course, as it is in every school, there's always somebody who says nothing, right? And so
Johnny is usually his name.
Yeah. So the teacher says, what's up? And he says, well, I don't think I understand the question. She said, why? He said, because I don't have any of the right answers. Well, she said, why don't you just stand and read what you got and we'll help you out. And he said, okay, the seven wonders of the world are to see and to hear and to taste and to touch and to smell and to love and to belong. So, the answer to the question about being alive is what allows me to be fully present this moment now. I use the phrase in my writing that I got from a priest in the 1700s. I didn't know the guy, of course. But he called it the sacrament of the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's my answer to the question. Like the little boy said to his mama, 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 listen to me, but this time with your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know you're alive? Be here now.
Mm-hmm. Go back to the first, what was the very first thing you said about being alive? There was one that I caught and I've just forgotten, but.
The see, hear, taste, touch, smell, love, and belong.
Yeah, and then you made a comment on that.
Just that you're present, that you're
actually literally present. That is
present. Well, and you know, here's the thing. We live in a world where is preoccupied with distraction, which means we're not present. We're elsewhere and otherwise. We're either around the corner or trying to feel bad about something back there.
Now, do you think we are present when we are in a contemplative state? We are not out in nature or out doing something. We are just, we're in our, you know, inner space, inner sanctum, and we are in a contemplative thought and sort of spiritual moment. Is that being in the present?
Sure. Well, yeah. The thing about that, that's being in the present, for example, I'll give you an illustration. So this is back in the day, a young monk goes to his abbot and says, you know, I suck at this contemplative thing. He said, what do you mean you suck at? I'm supposed to be here and just, you know, be silent and focused and whatever. But I can't, and I even tried prayer, that doesn't work. He said, why? He said, because all this, you know, all this shit in my head, this worries and everything is coming at me and la, 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 la. In other words, see, that's the irony, is he assumed that because he wasn't, quote, good at it, therefore he wasn't present there. And Abbott laughed at him, of course, and said, you know, you just need, would you just cut it out? Let those worries be. They need contemplation, too. In other words, being present to whatever is there is exactly right in contemplation. It's not a skill set that you say, okay, I passed it, now I'm present. No, I'm present even in moments where it's like, this is crap now, this hurts now, I don't get this now, this isn't working now, there's a comfort to my spirit now. In other words, you know what that's like, that whole thing you go through.
Absolutely, and I totally agree. So I'm asking, does feeling alive have more to do with activity or driving forces that take us, lead us to our activity? You know, those sort of spiritual, mental, emotional parts of our life that seem to be the drivers of what our outside activity is. Are those more a part of being alive than the actual activity itself? I'm not sure that question really made sense, but it makes sense to me. But
yeah, I don't parse it that much. I mean, what you have is you have children who are alive when they're young, and then all of a sudden we teach them how to parse it. I was just writing today. I'm in tomorrow for my tomorrow Sabbath moment. I was just writing. Here's a word. It's a Swedish word. It's called fika, F-I-K-A. It means, plain and simple, a moment to slow down and appreciate the goodness and beauty of living. I mean, boom. I don't parse it after that.
Yeah, really, yeah, yeah. But I love the warning of parsing it so much that it ends up being like seminary and a biblical text and about,
yeah,
exegeting,
exactly.
It, you know, and you start looking at each word, and before you know it, you have come up with a conclusion that was radically different than what the author intended by parsing detail.
It's like, and Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit. And Simon Peter said, do we have to write this down?
Yeah.
In other words, sometimes I just miss the moment.
So here's what I'm thinking.
Ready.
I have concocted things to make me feel alive. Two things that make me feel alive. I want to talk about them, and then I want to talk about yours. But things that make me feel alive are mystery and connection.
Okay.
And let me explain just a bit. On the mystery, we'll just talk about mystery and we'll come to connection later. But I believe that curiosity and imagination are, for me, part of the heart of being alive. is that I'm extremely curious. I want to know, and fortunately, many times my curiosity is not necessarily biased. I just want to know what others think, what is going around, asking about my life. And I talked with a very interesting person a couple of days ago who just really advocated the use of imagination. And that I think those are drivers in my life, and I think they are at the heart of mystery, because curiosity and imagination can take us to a world that is different than the existential world we're living in, that it's taken us to another realm. And this person I was talking to thought that curiosity and imagination were the most important of human attributes, and I feel the same. What do you know, when I'm curious about something, or then when I just go into, like right now, I imagine life all the time. I'm always creating, and that brings life about me, reason. It gives raison d'etre, and it gives me a sense of direction. How do you respond to that?
The thing about curiosity is that two things. One is there's always something to learn. So I haven't foreclosed. You haven't foreclosed, which is awesome. If as soon as you foreclose, you shut down. And curiosity means not, you don't shut down. But it also means, relative to relationships or people, is the reality that you now create a space where you invite that from other people. The curiosity asks questions, it listens, it learns, it smiles about that stuff. I think it'd be awesome to have more curiosity in a lot of the stuff we do. Now I'm speaking, of course, as clergy, but in the church. In other words, we shut down on a lot of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes curiosity lets us ask wonderful questions. Plus, and to the point, so you answered the question, you gave two things, but here's the deal, is awareness is the power here. And so when people say, what makes me come alive? See, that's the great part about this, is there's no right answers, but awareness about what makes you come alive is an unbelievable gift, you know. Because
how do people access that? You know, what is the journey to understand what makes you come alive? You know, apart from you know, like the American dream or something, sort of thing like that makes me come alive. That doesn't. It makes you follow constructs. You know?
Well, so that's the start. It's a paradigm. First, I'm a paradigm person. It's about paradigm shift. So if my questions are primarily about what makes my life resume worthy, then we're on the wrong track. See, when I was young, those were my questions. In other words, everything about coming alive was predicated on the paradigm of it had to be resume worthy. In other words, how do I become somebody? You remember me when I was that age.
I remember me too.
Yeah. And so as long as I'm with that paradigm, how does it make me somebody or something to be impressive? See, then we use words like success, which is what Thurman said. But the world doesn't need more of those people. And because this is the gift. Nancy, you know, my partner Nancy, she had one of her clients die today. So she was with her at her death.
And she's a hospice person, right?
Hospice. She's a hospice nurse. Yeah.
Yes.
So she was with her at her death. But I mean, you don't, during those times, you don't sit there and think, okay, what did she accomplish in her life? Lord, no. You look at all the wonderful things, the different paradigm, which is not about what made you, quote, somebody, but how are you able to embrace the sacrament of the present moment, the sacrament of the simple and extraordinary gifts of the delight of living in this world around me, you know?
And you can see how, you know, the two things that I said, curiosity and imagination, and you led to it in much of your discourse, you just said, also lead to connection. That
which is the corollary here, is that this is not just a sort of an individual thing. What's amazing about coming alive is we realize we're on this journey together. Because both your two things of curiosity and imagination create space for other people to be in the party.
You know, I wonder, Terry, look back at the day. You know, I'm going to take a little detour here, although it has to do with what we're talking about. But when Terry and I, we were acquaintances, you know, but we were not close friends until we made an actual determination to do that. You and I had an odd beginning to our relationship in that it was not something that grew over time. It was something that both of us felt a need for, you know, a confidence, a relationship that we could talk to, that we could relate to the other person. And each of us admitted, you know, that there was something was lacking in that. We each had people. It's not that we were lonely people, but we didn't maybe have intentional. I didn't have intentional. What do you think, in line with this movement, or this idea of being a live person, what do you think we saw in each other 30 or 40 years ago that said, you know, I think this could be an interesting journey with this individual? We didn't know, you know, nothing was set and settled other than we are just going to proceed and see how it goes along. But what do you think was that initial driver, besides that I was a better speaker than you?
I just assumed that one day you'd make enough money to buy the books that I wrote.
No, I don't buy them. I wait for the free copies that are signed
and
dedicated to me.
Well, there was no weighing and measuring. That was the key. You know, those years that we wrote those letters to each other, there was no weighing and measuring. In other words, so there was no need for there was no performance syndrome needed.
Oh, and there was brutal honesty. I mean, you know, that's why you want to publish them, and I don't want to publish them until I die. Because because I was brutally honest with my own foibles and
We both were exactly, but yeah, that's the whole thing is there was no, and that's the thing about once the paradigm is resume worthy, then you're thinking, do I measure up? But once you have the do I measure up, and see, we even do that with here. I mean, like, does this moment measure up? Speaking of being glad to be alive. Even the pictures we take have to be, quote, perfect. Lord, have mercy.
Perfect or what do you call them when you fix the photos, when you edit the photos?
Oh, yeah, Photoshop.
Photoshopping them, yeah. Yeah. So we can make it even better than it actually was.
we have, wouldn't that be great when you get to heaven? Would you like to come in as yourself, or would you like to come through the Photoshopped entrance? That'd be I'm going to do a whole shtick about that, I think. That's great.
That is great. So tell me about, I want to just get briefly into it because it's so important to me, about feeling alive to me. Curiosity drives my imagination. I have a feeling that the American culture lacks imagination, and it is much more resume, position, standardized, codified belief system. and that there is no room for imagination. There is no room for curiosity.
All of that you're talking about is predicated on we make assumptions. And once you make assumptions, you can't go anywhere else.
How do you manage your assumptions? Because we all live on assumptions. We've talked about our own personal myth.
But the whole point is, curiosity is the lubricant for assumptions. So you can let go of them or alter them or think, oh, okay, that's interesting. I just learned something new. I mean, you're dealing with that now. Certain things we quote believe. Well, you're learning things new. And what's wonderful about that is it's liberating, too.
It is.
It's free. Your curiosity is letting you set some assumptions down.
Yeah, right now, all but about two of my theological assumptions I'm dismissing. There are two that I can't dismiss. They're too core deep, and I don't mind them driving my thought, but they do not narrow me down. You know, they don't restrict me from thinking widely and thinking openly.
So, because when I went to university in London, and it wasn't a religious place, but one of my professors happened to also be clergy, so we had lots of conversations because I would say things that I quote believed, and he was the first one who said to me, "Why do you believe that?" And I realized my answer was always, "I have no idea."
That's what I was told.
In other words. Yeah, so that's why curiosity is the wonderful lubricant for that. In other words, it gets me out of the box. And the box is always the word should. The wonderful thing about, I'm getting theological here, but Jesus took the word should away from everybody he encountered.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, I'm reading a book right now that is turning my theological world upside down, and this comes from a pretty, you know, pretty substantial theology that, you know, I work by, although it's loose and open to new ideas, but Jesus is the rule breaker galore.
Yeah, and I would say, he's the assumption breaker that way too.
The assumption breaker, yes, very
absolutely.
Much more than the rule breaker. The rules sound like it's the assumptions behind the rules,
or the paradigm. He's the paradigm breaker. That you know, he broke the paradigm of there's us's and them's. You know, there's all kinds of paradigms that we do. You know, he broke the paradigm from, you know, you had to be resume worthy. You know, all those things.
Yeah, I love that resume worthy. What do you think about these two things that are polar to resume worthy, and that is curiosity and imagination and a number of other elements contribute to the world of mystery? I'm strongly into the world of mystery. That's why I'm, you know, strongly into the Christian mystics, especially the late medieval ones. And it's all a mystery, you know. It cannot be defined, you know. It's talking around it.
Yeah, as you know, my sort of, I don't know, my spiritual framework would be Celtic, which means it's very much grounded to sacred earth, you know.
Yeah, you're very much into mystery, whether you talk about it or not.
But that's the whole point. The point is that sacred earth, the mystery of the earth is we don't know, but it's sacred, and so we take delight in it. Wonder and delight. You want to know what makes me come alive? Wonder and delight.
I'm silent because, and I can't be silent on the radio. What am I doing? I was pondering what you were thinking. I love that. Wonder and delight. Yeah,
Those are mine too. Yeah,
yeah, wonder is huge for me.
Yeah, I'm in awe of, I mean, you know, moments where you just let, you know, we've all had moments like that where you just, you've been with me in Anaheim. It's a big convention that I speak at every year. It's a Catholic convention. And you've been there, this is in pre-COVID, you know, it's 40, 45,000 people there. Remember how packed those places are?
Oh my gosh.
Where the booths are where people have to walk and buy stuff or whatever. Remember that? Just wall to wall. And remember there's always a little soft ice cream place over there in the lobby? Okay, so I'm not making this up, am I? Wall to wall, just
you just No, it's wall to wall Christian trinkets.
So there was exactly Christian trinkets. Yeah, let's all learn about Jesus and buy some stuff. So the there was a over where we were, there's a wall over there, and on the other side from where we normally are with the booth I'm at, and there was a nun, and she was wearing her habit. She was wearing her full nun habit with the headdress in it. She was sitting on the floor against that wall with one of those soft ice cream cones, and her eyes were closed, and she was just in the midst of this chaos, complete chaos. And I thought, yes.
That is the sacrament of the present moment? Is that what you would say?
Yes, yes. And I thought, and I wonder who would come along and say, sister, get up. What are you doing? What's that? You know, and there was, she was completely in the moment. And I loved it.
So what prevents us, Terry? What is the obstacle to being in the moment, to relishing in this age-old term, the sacrament of the present moment?
To me, it's just about whatever we have chosen to use as a what's called a measurement. You know, this is that's the paradigm of measurement. How do you measure?
How do you measure wonder?
Exactly, you don't. That's
And that's it. How do you measure mystery? You don't.
But you know the reality of its existence. Yeah, but the whole thing is you just embrace it. It's there. You've just embraced it. That's it. You've embraced it.
So I just have this feeling where you know, you and I can get so philosophical, and that we are. Are we tangible enough for the people that are listening to us to help understand how to break through that resume? What did you call it? Resume
worthy.
Resume worthy lifestyle. How do you transcend that?
Give yourself the permission to ask different questions. So you ask different questions, and the question is what. Because I would, you know, and I've even asked them, you know, we've even talked about this stuff. You know, what made you smile real big this week? What did your heart good? What gave you gladness? You know, or even if you're a friend and you know them, I would say to you, what were you curious about?
Yeah, that would be closer to me because honestly,
my point is, once we learn those things, we ask the questions that give us the permission then to shift the paradigm.
How do I find those questions? I mean, I find them for me, but I'm asking from the
you
voice of our listeners.
That's the whole point is we keep finding them for one another, but we start with that.
Ah, we're finding them for one another.
We are, and that's the whole thing is that once we do that, then we get to ask those questions.
That's good. Let's take it.
I mean, you've been to my garden. I'm not there anymore on Vashon Island. You've been to my garden. My garden was my life. It was my everything about all this, about coming alive. And, you know, if someone doesn't know anything about gardening, I can't ask those kind of questions. But there's just something about going to a rose bush and smelling a rose that stops you in your tracks. And life is... And life is sacred right now. And so I don't know what that question is for other people. But give yourself the permission to start asking those questions. It's not a contest. It's not a race.
We started the pre-podcast because my producer and you and I fall prey to it a bit as well. You know, have political inclinations that are different than mine. But one thing... That, well, some places different, many places the same. But that policy-wise.
Not character-wise.
Absolutely not, and not care of the poor and disenfranchised. You know, those are critical elements to both of us. But you know, those are. You know, I talk to people on both the right and the left, and they have their assumptions. They're predisposed to those beliefs, and most of them can't even consider or ponder what it would be like to think like an opposite sider. You know, to think, you know, it's just, it's our way or you're going to hell. Maybe not a literal hell, but you know, you're off, you're way off track. And we just saw that in our recent elections. You know, the divisiveness continues to run rampant, and yet it is about predisposed assumptions, is it not? That I have chosen to believe Fox News, or I've chosen to believe, you know, pick anybody from the left. You know, I don't know, you know, who that would be, but you know, we've chosen to endorse those political philosophies. And we lose curiosity, we lose imagination, and we lose the next step that I want to go to, and that's sort of more of a universal connection. We get connection with those who believe and think the way I do, but I'm not really ready to interact with somebody who, I mean, genuinely interact, not argue, but consider the viewpoints of people who are different than us. And I think that applies to your resume mentality on building up my core belief system so I can defend it against anybody.
Okay, you've shifted gears here.
I have.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
But I think just as an example of not being in the present moment.
I don't disagree that in everything that I do, I need to ask what my assumptions are and what box I put life in, and be willing to ask about anyone who doesn't fit in that box, what can I learn from you? There's zero doubt about that. In fact, it's the first question is, what can I learn? And so if there's a conversation, then let's have one. Where did I put it? I just wrote it in Sabbath Moment today, or yesterday. I talked about what kind of world I want to live in. I'm trying to find it now. I said that because having this habit has to do with now I'm trying to find it again. I'll find it. But this has to do with the thing about, you know, shutting down and not being available. So I write Sabbath Moment. You mentioned that's my blog. And yes, I have certain ways that I script my life in terms of choices for... You went to the political world, but that has to, yes, political world, the way the world is structured. But this is why I write Sabbath Moment, which I hope is fueled by curiosity. And here it is. I want to live, regardless, I want to live with whatever, with a soft heart. I want my heart to be soft. I don't want ever want it to be hard. And I want to create places for sanctuary for people, empathy, inclusion, compassion, and kindness.
It's hard for me to come up with better ideals than that, you know, better goals. You know, those are tremendous goals that I really endorse. What I want to do now is I want to take a quick break because we just have a bit of time to go,
yeah.
But I want to change subjects, and I want to change what makes you feel alive. I want to go to another what makes you feel alive concept. So let's take a big break and we'll come back, a brief break and come back. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. My dear friend Terry Hershey and I are talking about what it means to feel fully alive and to embrace a life of being aliveness. to embrace aliveness in your life. And we were talking about honoring the sacrament of the sacred moment, which is being open, which is being curious, which is, you know, as I brought up, there's a place for imagination in there, and that we are creating this wonderful world in the sphere of mystery. Now, that is for me personally, you know, so that helps me as an individual. That guides me and keeps me involved and excited and interested. But there's another social element to it, and that is what I'm titling as connection, and that we are not created to be alone. Connection is essential for all of us. Every human needs connection, even those of us that are introverts. You know, you and I are both pretty strong introverts, and we can spend a lot of time alone and be fine with that. Although, I must admit, for me, I can't say it for you, but my guess is it's true for you. I can't function without intimate relationships, feedback, people that I enjoy laughing with, learning with, and the connection. You know, we have a human connection, and then we have a divine connection, and that's what, you know, the Christian mystics are all about, is about divine connection. It's about that space, that liminal space of relationship with the divine, where we actually feel like we're getting instruction from a higher source. Give me your impressions of connection.
Well, it's the one of the things I say in my writing all the time is that no one of us is on this journey alone. It's an impossibility.
Yeah, we're just walking each other home. Isn't that what you write a lot about?
Yeah, and Ram Dass is the one who said that. We're literally just walking each other home. I mean, there's no such thing as it's an impossibility, because anything having to do with care, love, whatever, it has to do with we. It's we. And so, and that's the gift of that. And yes, 100%.
So what does that connection, you know, we're going to encourage our listeners to consider connection with other people. What does that process look like? It's not always our spouse or significant other.
No.
It's delightful if it is, but very frequently it is not.
This is also true, too, is that connections are not necessarily also about being resume worthy. Connections are about being glad to be alive. In other words, places where our heart fell alive, and where we were able to make someone else's heart feel alive. I mean, that's the power. That's the gift.
I have a friend.
Like Mother Teresa, the Mother Teresa's thing. Her stuff is just, I'm in awe.
Because I've not read much of Mother Teresa. I mean, of course I know who she is, but I've not read of any of her writings.
It's just the remarkable, I mean, using yours, curiosity and mystery, only grows substantially when you're connected with other people.
I agree. And that connection...
And it might not be people who are alive. For example, you read the mystics. The point is, every time you read one of them, they're your friend.
They're my mentors.
Exactly. And you gladly share it with whoever you're with. And see, that's the whole point. Is it spills. It always spills. Gladness to be alive always spills. It's like the light that shines. It always spills. It's not because you're trying to spill it. It just does.
How it's disconcerting when I think how few people understand, endorse, or embrace what we're talking about, because not because they're incapable, not because they're limited in their human growth, but because we're not taught this. This is not part of our education. This is educate. I mean, whether we talk about formal education in schools, or we talk about religious or spiritual education, we are not taught this. We are taught programs, and we're talking about we're taught following this. Even as a regular meditator, it's a program, you know, a thing that I follow. Now, do I get much out of it? Yes, but it is. It is less. There's a word that I'm not thinking of. It's less real. It's less impromptu, and it's more set up and conjured. You know, we always want to give. Give me the steps to feeling alive.
There are.
Right? Isn't that the question?
Yeah. And I would say you got to let that question go. See, because the steps of feeling alive is that's like it's an assignment. It's like
it's a test.
It's not a test.
It's not a test. No. It's not a checklist.
You know what? This is the honest to God answer to your question. I'm sitting at my desk. I live in Port Ludlow, Washington. It is almost 5 o'clock at night, which means it's just about dark, literally 5 o'clock at night, just about dark.
Right.
So I lift up my face to look out my window. I'm in my study, and there are fir trees that are probably almost, one of them is close to a ball field high. I mean, a football field high.
Serious?
Oh, yeah. Some of these are unbelievable. And so And it's against a sky that now is just at dusk. So the answer, there was no assignment to that. Stop what you're doing and pay attention to the moment. Because I'll let you go, because this tree is unbelievable against the sky. It's a gift.
Are there not...
Set down the need to be someplace else. Be here.
How do I get to the point in the midst of my struggles, in the midst of coming home from work with a crappy work environment, and how do I set aside all of those preoccupations that distract me from anything mysterious or anything that has unquantitative results from it. You know, I can't quantify it, but it is certainly real.
It literally is the permission to start asking questions. I'm back to Jesus now, but what enables you just simply to be here now? Okay, I'm on my way home from a job I don't like and from a life that is heavy and painful. Okay, good. On the way home, is there anything I see, hear, taste, touch, smell, or love and belong that makes me glad to be here? Embrace it. What is it? Name it. Start naming things. Give yourself the permission to name things. That's what curiosity says. Start naming things. Name them. Name them for me.
You know, and as much as it's not our style to do so, maybe that's an encouragement to our listeners, is to attempt to identify
exactly
those delightful non-quantitative.
Okay, if you want to put it in that context, I mean, if you were doing a relationship seminar, you would tell people how do you do it. You'd do the same thing. In terms of ways you're connected with the person you're in a relationship with, name things. In other words, the same with being alive. Start naming stuff that affirms that for you, that makes that real for you, that allows you to slow down, that allows you to be present.
That's so cool.
But it allows you to be grateful. That's the key. It allows you to be grateful.
Now, I know you've already answered this question, but I want to close with you answering this question. You know, once again, because I've already asked it, but I would like to close with it. What does Terry Hershey do to feel alive, especially in the midst of difficult situations or challenging situations?
I put everything down and I go on a walk. It would be really hard for me, I think of this, for people who are seniors who are stuck and can't move, can't do, to not be connected to the outside world. It would be really hard for me.
Like Nancy's hospice people?
Yeah, and some, this isn't a remarkable thing, Charlie. Some of those places now do that, where they have windows where people can see and they have plants inside. In other words, they bring that world to people who can't get to it. Because that, for me, does it.
Well, I love that. I want to wrap it up with re-quoting Howard Thurman. Don't ask yourself what the world needs. And in America, that's where we stand, especially in, you know, just our obsession with politics right now. It is about asking ourselves what the world needs. And Howard encourages us, ask yourself what makes you come alive and go do that. Don't fix the world. Go do what makes you come alive, because the world needs people who have come alive. And that will change, that will impact much of what's going on, and it will impact our lives incredibly. I'm waiting.
Amen.
Hey, Hirsch. Thanks for being with me today. You are a connection, and we can talk about things, as I'm sure our listeners can tell, are difficult subjects with a lot of people, because a lot of people, they're not given opportunity to think this way. They're not encouraged to think
permission.
This way.
Permission.
Yeah, opportunity and permission, because they don't even know it exists.
Right.
And we're just trying to do a little paradigm shift here. So thanks, Hirsch. It's great.
Thanks.
And I want to encourage everyone to check out your Sabbath Moment. Really, it's you've got a format that's really good now, is that you give a subject on Monday, and then Tuesday through Friday, or Saturday.
No, just Friday, yeah.
Tuesday through Friday, you expand on that premise, and it's really good. So I encourage people to check that out at terryhershey.com. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and be sure to check out our website, thenextchapter.life. And as usual, until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.